In U.S. working forests, or forest land carefully managed to provide a steady, renewable supply of wood for daily use, more than 1 billion trees are planted every year, and forestry experts protect and manage hundreds of millions of acres. Working forests have been sustainably managed for decades. How? It's simple. They plant more trees than they harvest. Learn more at workingforestsinitiative.com.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
This is The Weeds. I'm Jonquilin Hill. A couple weeks ago, we got a question from a familiar voice, at least to me. If you listen to the show regularly, it's a name you probably recognize.
Hey, this is A.M. Hall, editorial director of The Weeds. And just like you, I have questions. And there's one question that's been nagging at me lately, and I'm hoping we can answer it today. For me, and for all of you, here it is. On a scale from 1 to 10, how worried should I be about AI and the election?
A isn't the only one with this question. It's something I've had my eye on too, especially this year. 2024 isn't just an election year here in the U.S. This year, we'll see over 50 other countries around the world hold elections, impacting half of the world's population. It's going to be a real test for democracy, and we're already seeing the ways that ever-changing technology is playing a role, from ChatGPT to image generation, audio deepfakes, and more. To find out what's going on with AI, campaigns, and what this means for elections, I made a call.
I'm Tiffany Hsu, and I cover misinformation and disinformation for The New York Times.
So I put the question to Tiffany. On a scale from 1 to 10, how worried should we be about AI in this election?
I would say be nervous. A lot of the experts that I talk to are quite concerned, and they spend their careers thinking about this sort of thing.
So artificial intelligence, AI, broadly speaking, how can AI technology be used?
In an election context, in a lot of different ways. It's really a risk-reward situation with AI, especially this year. A lot of people are saying that AI could be helpful in like reducing campaign costs because it can essentially create instant responses to like debate questions or attack ads. It can be used to quickly analyze data. Apparently, some politicians are already using it for translation purposes. So, for example, I'm a politician. I put myself in a campaign ad as a video, and then I can distribute versions of that video where I'm speaking languages that I don't speak in real life. And so the idea is, you know, you can get closer to underserved communities or communities you wouldn't otherwise be able to reach. So that's the pro. The con is that because AI can be used to create really any kind of content, we're talking text through chatbots, we're talking image generator, so anything visual that also creates deepfake videos and audio, it can be used to deceptive ends. So the concern there is I could see a video of myself being circulated that was never actually filmed because it was created by a machine. There could be emails sent out at scale quoting me saying things that I never said. So as a vehicle for spreading lies, it could be pretty effective.
That's really scary, especially, you know, our voices are out there. I don't know. That's something I think about a lot, even beyond the political implications.
Right. I have had so many researchers explain to me that you can make an audio spoof in minutes. There was a scam going around over the holidays involving Taylor Swift, where her voice was spoofed to appear as if she was selling Le Creuset cookware. She obviously wasn't, but it sounded like her voice. And if you were scrolling through a social media platform quickly, you would probably be none the wiser. If you apply that to an election situation, that's pretty dangerous for democracy.
Yeah, I think around that same time, I saw a video floating around of someone spoofing Cardi B's voice.
Yo, it's your girl Cardi.
Saying like, oh, the government is giving these types of refunds.
And I'm going to show you how to put $16,000 in your pocket right now for free.
It very obviously to me did not seem to be Cardi B, but someone somewhere may fall for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's an example of this already potentially having an effect in an election. Last year, there was an election in Slovakia where audio that most researchers now believe was likely a deepfake spread that seemed to show the pro-Western party candidate claiming vote buying. That might have played a role in that party losing to a pro-Kremlin party. That Slovakia example is being cited pretty often now as potential evidence that audio is something to be concerned about. But there are many, many other examples already of deepfake, of text, of audio being used to likely malicious ends in the elections that are happening around the world.
You mentioned before some of the, you know, ways campaigns may want to use this technology, you know, whether it's reaching people who speak a different language, you know, mass emails. Are campaigns embracing the technology or are they kind of, you know, eschewing it?
There are mixed feelings about it. There are definitely campaigns that are doing AI-related work and have been doing it for years. For example, chatbots are a pretty simple way to draft emails, like fundraising emails. It's not that hard to use a chatbot to come up with a couple of different versions and then maybe have a human edit it. The DeSantis campaign already produced AI-generated imagery of Trump embracing Fauci with no disclaimer. The RNC had an ad that showed parts of America in scenes of chaos. There was a Toronto mayoral candidate that had a campaign featuring fake dystopian images of homeless encampments. And my favorite was an image that showed a woman with two arms crossed and then a third arm touching her chin. So it was pretty obvious and sloppy, but it was still a use of AI in an election. In New Zealand, there was a party that posted on Instagram this rendering of robbers in a jewelry shop. And it, you know, looked pretty realistic.
Doctored images and political propaganda have been around for ages. But why is this moment different or more dangerous? Is it?
Oh, absolutely. Because now you can lie easily and at scale. In the past, if you wanted to, for example, generate a blog post that spread false rumors about a candidate, you would probably have to write it yourself and then post it yourself. You don't have to do that anymore. With chatbots, you can do multiple versions very quickly off of a service that is probably free or accessible at a very low cost. It doesn't take any great technical know-how to use this sort of thing. And then you can post it wherever you want. And the same thing goes for audio. To a lesser extent, the same thing goes for image generators. A lot of the AI companies that are producing these sorts of tools are trying to create guardrails. They're making it so that certain prompts don't produce imagery or text or audio that could have a negative effect. But it's also pretty easy to get around a lot of those guardrails.
Yeah, I want to go back to this idea of AI being more dangerous now because of the sophistication. How is that changing things? And how sophisticated has it gotten? Like, what are we seeing?
So a few months ago, a colleague and I did a story where we asked, can we no longer believe anything that we see? And we looked at image generators and their ability to produce realistic images. And at that point, there were still certain tells. So for example, a lot of the generators tended to produce people with like multiple fingers, multiple extra fingers, or fingers that were like weirdly stubby or kind of floppy. It was like everything everywhere all at once, but in an AI image. A lot of the generators also had issues with producing text within an image. If you looked at renderings of people in like the background of certain images, a lot of them would start to meld together and look blurry. That is increasingly no longer the case. a lot of the chatbots and image generators and voice cloning tech has gone through upgrades in the past year, and they're much, much, much better. The added concern is that the detection technology is not catching up, and it really never will, because detection technology by its nature is designed to react to existing technology. So you're always going to be in this cat and mouse cycle where the AI tech is more advanced than the technology that exists to try to detect its use. And so the problem is now that you have AI technology that is capable of producing content that is extremely and increasingly realistic, and it's not easy to know that.
There are lots of elections around the world this year, and, you know, we've already seen some. How have we seen AI used abroad so far?
I wish we had hours and hours and hours to discuss the examples, because there are many. There was an election in Argentina last year where AI was used pretty prominently. Candidates used it to portray themselves as heroic figures, like soldiers, a Ghostbuster, Indiana Jones, showing them on like the cover of The New Yorker. And then it was also used to show their opponents as like the villain in Clockwork Orange. India is preparing to vote. Their elections are in the spring. This is the world's biggest democracy. Their information technology minister, Ashwini Vaishnaw, called deepfakes a, quote, threat to democracy, which is a concern that's shared by their prime minister, Narendra Modi. There have been information influence operations that target elections. There's a campaign that's known as Spamouflage. It's actually been around for a few years. But researchers recently have said that it seems to be pivoting to target the U.S. election in November, in part by using AI images that show, like, President Biden and former President Trump, like, in battle stance with spears that are on fire. It shows images of, like, cracks in the White House and the Statue of Liberty. On Twitch, there is a 24/7 deepfake debate between Biden and Trump.
Oh my gosh, I saw that. It's wild. If you just, like, if you're glancing, like, if it was on your TV in your living room and you're just walking by, you would be like, oh, there's a debate today?
Totally. If you told me that is real, I would not say, oh, you're crazy. Because it looks like it could be real, even though they're saying completely ludicrous things that I think not even they would say in real life.
You think I'm scared? I eat MAGA clowns like him for breakfast without even breaking a sweat.
That clip you just heard? It's a bunch of malarkey. Up next, what everyone from states to tech companies are doing to curb deepfakes.
In U.S. working forests, or forest land carefully managed to provide a steady, renewable supply of wood for daily use, more than 1 billion trees are planted every year, and forestry experts protect and manage hundreds of millions of acres. Working forests have been sustainably managed for decades. How? It's simple. They plant more trees than they harvest. Learn more at workingforestsinitiative.com.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Okay, What is the regulatory landscape currently as it relates to AI and elections? I want to start at the state level. What are we seeing there?
Yeah, so this is something that has been pretty surprising to me because generally you don't see legislators at any level moving with any amount of speed. It kind of seems like this year, a lot of them realize, we have kind of a major election coming. We should probably figure out this AI business. So as of January, 32 states have bills to regulate deepfakes in elections. 5 states have enacted laws. That's California, Texas, Washington, Minnesota, and Michigan. They all have varying penalties. Some are more stringent than others. Lots of questions about whether or not any of those regulations can effectively be enforced because so much AI content generation happens anonymously. But just the fact that there is so much movement so suddenly is telling as to the level of concern about this tech.
What about the federal government? What does regulation, you know, look like there?
As far as I know, regulation doesn't exist at the moment. There is a bipartisan effort in the Senate from Senators Klobuchar and Hawley to try to draft regulation related to the use of AI in federal elections. There's another effort in the House from Yvette Clark. They're still discussing it. I think a common worry that's voiced by a lot of experts in this field is that AI is an extremely complicated technology, and a lot of legislators don't understand it. And they don't understand how quickly it's advancing and how much of a heave would be required for legislation to keep up with those advancements. There are also some other federal level efforts. The Federal Communications Commission this month outlawed unwanted robocalls that were created by AI. And that was a response to robocalls that mimicked President Biden's voice during the New Hampshire primary in January.
What a bunch of malarkey. We know the value of voting Democratic when our votes count. It's important that you save your vote for the November election.
There's been some criticism of the Federal Election Commission for dragging its feet because they haven't produced any rules specifically about AI campaign ads. They're saying that they might make a decision by summer, but by then, honestly, it's probably too late.
The election was like, that's like, we're more than halfway there.
Right.
And I heard that robocall. I was surprised by how realistic it sounded. Because in the past, a lot of them have sounded fake. But that one, I'm like, okay, I could see how someone could get fooled by that one.
Yeah, the audio technology is frankly what concerns me most. With AI imagery, there are at least visual cues that you can sometimes pick up. You know, like the hands, like the text. With audio, it's really tough. Sometimes the audio comes out sounding like a little robotic. The pauses might be a little weird. But if you're listening quickly, who's to say that something is real or not real?
Earlier, you brought up lawmakers and the fact that, you know, this is complicated technology. And lawmakers, you know, they're notoriously not the most tech savvy. I think of Senator Blumenthal's, like, Finsta blunder.
Will you commit to ending Finsta?
And that's a major reason why when it comes to tech companies, you know, the government can be kind of slow to act. But it seems like, especially on the state level, people are moving quickly. What does that signal? And, you know, is there concern at all that they're moving on things that they don't quite understand?
That absolutely is a concern. I think there are different camps in regard to the speed of legislative efforts around this. There's one camp that says, let's just get legislation in the books. Let's just try to have guardrails in place. We can iron out the specifics later, but we've got to start policing this sort of thing. There's the other camp, of course, that says, hold your horses. We don't really understand how this technology works. We don't really know how much of an effect it's going to have on elections. Let's just study it and produce a law that is coherent and comprehensive. That said, there is some relief among the experts that I talked to that the tech companies themselves seem to be increasingly invested in this sort of thing. A number of companies have in the past few weeks released rules regarding AI use in elections using their tools or their platforms. At the Munich Security Conference, 20 companies, and that includes companies like Amazon, Microsoft, TikTok, and even X, which is not particularly known at the moment for content moderation.
Yeah, it's a wild west over there.
Yeah, but they all signed this pledge to keep AI from disrupting voting, which was, you know, it's probably a symbolic move. Like, who's to say what specifics they're actually going to be able to enforce? But the fact that 20 companies got together and were like, we should address this is pretty telling. And then there have been other guidelines and suggestions released by like OpenAI, Google, Meta, Anthropic. What's funny about OpenAI is, you know, they're announcing rules to prevent abuse of their tools during elections. And then they're releasing Sora, which is this like phenomenally effective AI-generated video tool. It is like stunningly realistic what Sora is able to do.
Recently, some of the sample videos came out. And, you know, they probably aren't going to show the crappy ones. But it was shocking. Like, it looked like actual film.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, though, that you say they're not going to show the crappy ones, because a number of the companies, when they were releasing their chatbots or introducing their chatbots, showed their chatbots hallucinating and sharing fake information or inaccurate information. So a lot of these releases aren't as pristine as a tech company might hope.
Yeah. Are the tech companies sort of the ones in the driver's seat when it comes to this at the moment, especially because, you know, they're developing the technology, they're in control of it? I'm just curious sort of like what's the calculus there and what they're after.
I mean, there's a lot of hot potato when it comes to who's responsible for AI regulation. You know, you've got some side saying, oh, it should be the government, it should be regulators. Others are saying, no, it should be the companies like Anthropic and OpenAI that actually produce these tools. And then others are like, no, it should be the social platforms. It should be Meta. It should be TikTok, because they're the ones that are helping to spread most of the content that gets produced. And then there's also a camp that is like consumers of content should improve their media literacy so that they can catch it. So who's to say who's ultimately responsible? It's probably a mix of all of them. But for the tech companies, I mean, AI is a lucrative business. This is an industry that is having just unfathomable loads of cash being pumped into it by investors. So they're all and have been in a race to produce the best and most effective technology out there before consumers start to winnow down to like an obvious winner. They all want to win. And so some of them are starting to tackle this question of potential harms, but profit continues to be a major motive here, if not the primary motive.
The cynic in me thinks, you know, okay, they're trying to keep the backlash that maybe happened after the 2016 election and misinformation from happening. It's like, how can we get ahead of this so we don't have to deal with that again?
There's probably a component of that. I mean, a lot has been written in the past few months about some of the major social platforms backpedaling on their election integrity efforts. I mean, X laid off a huge portion, if not all, of their election integrity team. Trust and safety teams at Meta have taken a hit. Same at YouTube. There has been a distinct pullback in how a lot of these platforms are prioritizing election moderation. This is maybe a way to balance that out with these AI-related efforts. But it's hard to say how effective a lot of this is going to be in the heat of a campaign.
I know it's different for the people who are developing the technology, but even for those who are developing it, there's still so much unknown. Is it sort of the same cat and mouse game that we're seeing with detection software? You know, we don't know what an issue is until it presents itself.
Yeah, I mean, the AI boom really didn't start until last year. We're talking about an industry that has seen incredible leaps and bounds in just a couple of months. So the fact that detection capabilities for the most part are terrible is not super surprising. My colleague and I wrote a story in June about detection tech. We tested some of these services and the results were astounding, frankly. I mean, there were images created by AI that showed like Elon Musk making out with a robot, where a bunch of the detection services were like, yep, real photo. There was an image of a giant Neanderthal that was standing next to, like, normal-sized people. We looked at five different detection services. All five of them said that that Neanderthal image was a real photo. There was an image that purported to show a bombing at the Pentagon that was quickly debunked. I mean, the building was, upon closer inspection, not the Pentagon. The smoke looked kind of funky. I mean, it was pretty clearly an AI-generated image. Four of the five detection services were like, yep, real photo. So, I mean, when you have detection services that, you know, can't tell that an image of Harry Potter actors in, like, pastel Wes Anderson style is not a real photo, then there's reason to be worried. And those detection services have probably improved since we wrote that story, but so have the generators that they're trying to detect.
Up next, we'll see if I can spot the fake.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and this is Unlocking Us. In this podcast, we'll explore ideas, stories, experiences, research, books, films, music, anything that reflects the universal experiences of being human, from the bravest moments to our most brokenhearted moments. Some episodes will be conversations with the people who are teaching me, challenging me, confusing me, maybe ticking me off a little bit. And some days I'll just talk directly to you about what I'm learning and how it's changing the way I think and feel. The first episodes are out now. We're going to do 3 or 4 part series every quarter, so about 12 to 15 episodes a year. Unlocking Us will always drop on Wednesdays. And now you can find me wherever you normally listen to your podcasts. You can get new episodes as soon as they are published by following Unlocking Us on your favorite podcast app. And as always, stay awkward, brave, and kind.
Once upon a time in America, there was no such thing as all-you-can-eat shrimp. And then the world changed.
Today, shrimp is the most popular, the most consumed seafood in America. The endless shrimp fiesta is an American institution.
But that shrimp fiesta comes at a steep price. Here at Gastropod, we found out that hidden behind the delicious shrimp on your plate is environmental disaster and modern-day slavery.
So can you have your shrimp and a clear conscience too? Actually, yes, and we've got the secret to help you unlock true, lifelong shrimp happiness. Listen to the latest episode of Gastropod wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. It's The Weeds. I'm Jonquan Hill, and I'm here with Tiffany Hsu from The New York Times. Okay, Tiffany, before the break, we talked about fake image detection, and I want to try something. So we're going to do a little test. I've given you the link, and we are going to try to spot the fake AI photos. Just to describe what I'm seeing, it looks like a man, maybe in his late, white man in his late 30s, brown hair, a little bit of stubble. And now I have to try to see if he's real or not. I'm going to say that this is a real person. And I was wrong. It was generated by AI. Okay, we can try one more. Okay, this is a younger guy, maybe like 20s. He could even be as young as 19. Dark hair, brown eyes. His facial hair looks suspicious to me. So I'm going to say he is AI. And I got that wrong. He is a real person. Sir, I'm sorry I said that your facial hair was suspicious. So that is concerning. I consider myself someone who is extremely media literate, but some of this is still really convincing. Like these photos, like that Biden robocall in New Hampshire. Have you been fooled before? How do you navigate this?
Will I admit that I've been fooled on this podcast? I will say I have not been fooled yet in print in anything that I've published. I mean, I have seen many, many images that at first glance, I was like, yeah, that could be a photo. I mean, frankly, I took this quiz and it was not pretty. It was not pretty. And every time I've done a story about how terrible detection technology is, I've had to look at images like this. And I'm like, you know what? You're also not great at detection. It's hard. It's really realistic.
Why aren't companies, regulators, anybody, why not institute a ban of some kind on this technology until, you know, the election is over?
I mean, they can certainly try. There have been efforts by some of the tech companies to be like, you know, you have to disclose this sort of thing, or, you know, you can't use our technology or our tools to campaign. But how do you enforce something like that? A lot of the people who are playing around with this tech are anonymous. There are Reddit groups, Facebook groups, where people are just sharing reams of AI-generated content, and you don't know any of their names. They're all hiding behind anonymous account handles. So it's one thing to say you are not allowed to do this. It's another thing to say we can stop you and here's how. Because I don't think anyone really knows at the moment how to enforce a prohibition on this sort of content.
I am really curious. I'm thinking of, you know, not just media literacy, but AI literacy 101. What should we ask ourselves or be on the lookout for? How can we avoid, you know, being fooled by some of this really advanced technology?
So I like to use this example of a panel that I watched. It was a virtual panel that I watched late last year, and it featured a guy named Larry Norden, who is from the Brennan Center for Justice, and he's an elections expert. And, you know, he was on this panel talking about kind of some of the AI-related concerns when it comes to elections. And when he finished, the organizers were like, Larry, we've got a surprise for you. And then they pulled up a deep fake of Larry using his voice to make some of the same points that he had just made. And the takeaway from that, I think, is A, that the technology is really good now. You can expect mimicry that will persuade a lot of people that it's real. But B, also that the solution is right there. And the solution in that case was Larry, right? All you would have to do is go to Larry and say, Larry, I saw this footage of you. Is it real? And of course, caveat, Larry could lie. This is actually something called the liar's dividend. It's a phenomenon that a lot of people are worried about, where politicians could use the presence of AI to say, oh, that audio or that video you saw of me like cheating on my wife while I was trying to rig the vote. Yeah, that's deepfake, even if it was actual footage. I mean, that's a concern. But what I've been telling people is it's probably a good idea to try to find authoritative sources and start from there. If you can go to like state elections websites, if you can go to known nonprofits that deal with election integrity, if you can go to a candidate's website and look at their platform there, then it's a good jumping off point to generate your own analysis, to form your own opinions, and to make any decision that a voter would. Because then you know that you're starting from a point that is pretty provably authentic. Is it possible at some point for bad actors to spoof some of those websites and some of those authoritative sources? Yeah, there's always going to be a workaround by people with malicious intent, but it's a good place to start.
How hopeful are you that, you know, people are going to start kind of doing that due diligence when they come in contact with a piece of media in the wild? Like, you know, we don't have a great record when it comes to media literacy. And do you think that AI is going to be the thing to shift that at all?
There has been research that offers a little bit of hope that, especially after 2016, that a fair number of people became wiser to the fact that there is information and content out there that probably shouldn't be trusted. Do I think people are more aware that there's misinformation and disinformation out there? Yeah, I do. Do I have confidence that they care? Not necessarily. I mean, it's tricky dealing with this subject because while it has major ramifications for democracy, for how the world is run, for how we perceive truth in reality, it's a lot for people to process, right? If you're constantly telling someone, don't trust this information, be skeptical, you end up with something that a researcher once described to me as information nihilism, where people don't trust anything, where they throw their hands up and say, if I don't know what reality is, I'm not going to care to find out, which is dangerous in and of itself, right? So the balance is hard to strike in this case, but I think people are wiser to the fact that this is a problem. You know, actually, there is a good example in the case of Taiwan. Taiwan had their election last month, and in the lead up to it, there was a lot of chatter about how disinformation from China might sway the election, how it could negatively influence how voters perceive certain issues. But I think the conclusion reached by a lot of people who study Taiwanese politics is that actually in the past few years, Taiwanese civilians have become pretty literate in media. They make use of the fact-checking community that is there. They tend to take a beat before trusting some of the information that circulates in their media ecosystem. Unlike a lot of places, Taiwan actually has a pretty robust and pretty diverse media landscape, which is always helpful. And it was kind of a promising sign for a lot of people that in this particular election, which I should caveat by saying wasn't especially close, people were nonetheless heartened to see evidence that disinformation didn't seem to be as effective as had been feared.
What are the implications for all of this beyond, you know, elections and politics? Like, what is the impact that AI could have on, you know, just the everyday person listening to this conversation?
I mean, AI is used in everything already, right? It powers a lot of the recommendation algorithms that we use when we're, you know, searching for things, when we're shopping or whatever. It powers a lot of, like, the map tools that we use. Like, all of these random technological implications are already there for AI. With generative AI, though, it takes it to another level. Beyond elections, there's pretty substantial concern about, like, deepfake porn, about the use of especially image generators to create non-consensual sexual content. Last month, there was kind of an uproar about Taylor Swift being the victim of this, that there had been a channel on 4chan that was treating the creation of deepfake porn featuring celebrities as kind of a game. You know, and I looked at this thread and there are a lot of examples and a lot of them are really realistic. And, you know, it doesn't just affect celebrities. There have been cases where, like, high school and middle school students have been the subject of this sort of thing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times this sort of thing is used for revenge. And the fact that this technology is now so easy to use and so easy to access is deeply concerning for a lot of authorities. You know, that said, many of the AI companies that make these tools are taking steps to not have their tools respond to prompts asking for images of a sexualized nature or prompts that ask for an image of a real person or a public figure, that sort of thing. But, you know, it's as that 4chan thread showed, it's pretty easy to work around those restrictions.
What's one thing you're watching, you know, that we all should be paying attention to as the campaigns ramp up and the election approaches?
I am personally really interested in the Liar's Dividend phenomenon. That's the ability to sow doubt by claiming that authentic evidence is fake. This was already manifested in the Israel-Hamas war. A lot of people were saying it's not so much that AI-generated content is convincing people of one particular view. It's that the fact that people can create AI-generated content means that people don't trust anything that they're seeing about the conflict. And my concern is that somehow that's going to play a role in the mega cycle of elections around the world, because really all you need is a well-timed deepfake audio file to land in October. And then you have an October surprise that is very, very hard to disprove one way or the other. And it's very hard to track who created it. So you don't have the kind of accountability measures in place, at least at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it seems like, you know, it can lead to a hit to everyone's credibility just for existing, you know, in the same world as this stuff.
Yeah, there was a letter that Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson wrote in October. She sent it to Senator Chuck Schumer of New York. And she said that AI-generated content may supercharge the believability of highly localized misinformation. And I think in an election in the U.S. where, like, particular precincts might determine how the race goes, that's pretty terrifying. I mean, she said, those seeking to sway outcomes or sow chaos may enlist AI tools to mislead voters about wait times, closures, or even violence at specific polling locations. And, you know, the fact that this technology could be used to prevent the democratic process from proceeding as it should is something that everyone should be watching and trying to prevent, though it's unclear how exactly that should take place.
Tiffany Hsu, thank you so much for joining us today on The Weeds.
Yes, thanks for having me.
So this brings us back to our original question. On a scale from 1 to 10, how worried should we be about AI this election year? I'm going to put us at a 7. Not only has the technology gotten better, but this tech now offers plausible deniability for anything out there that is true. I realize that isn't the most satisfying answer. If I'm honest, it's actually a really unsettling one. But that just means we're going to have to be really diligent and pay attention to where we're getting our information from. Do you have a question? It can be about anything. The election, the economy, how something works, or how to solve a problem you see in the world. You ask it, and we'll find answers and explore ideas. Email your questions to weeds@vox.com. That's all for us today. Thank you to Tiffany Hsu for joining me. Our producer is Sophie Lalonde. Krishna Ayala engineered this episode. Melissa Hirsch fact-checked it. A.M. Hall asked today's big question, and they're also our editorial director. And I'm your host, John Glenn Hill. This podcast is part of Vox, which doesn't have a paywall. Help us keep it that way by going to vox.com/give.
In U.S. working forests, or forest land carefully managed to provide a steady, renewable supply of wood for daily use, more than 1 billion trees are planted every year, and forestry experts protect and manage hundreds of millions of acres. Working forests have been sustainably managed for decades. How? It's simple. They plant more trees than they harvest. Learn more at workingforestsinitiative.com.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.